Welcome everyone to the Split Screen Podcast, the official podcast of BlankPageBeatdown.com. My name is Shah Shahid, and this is the podcast where we compare film remakes with their source material, be it comic books, novels, television series, or even other movies, in order to expose the differences, discover the similarities, and kind of put it all into context. This episode, we're going to be comparing two kind of difficult movies, but pretty interesting nonetheless. The first film will be Hamlet, the 1990 version with Mel Gibson, and we'll be comparing that against Haider, the 2014 version, directed by Vishal Bhardwaj. With me today, this has been in the making for, I'm going to say two years? I don't know what it was. But anyway, she was super excited to be here. But I want to introduce, this is someone that I met originally through, I mean, before even I even had my own podcast. This was one of the first Bollywood podcasts I ever listened to. So I'm going to go as far as to say she is one of the Bollywood podcasting pioneers in the landscape. So I'm super honored to have with me on the show today, Miss Kayfil. I'm not saying your full name because I don't know how to pronounce
that
last
That's part. Totally fine. Yay, that was a weird introduction because you know I know nothing about podcasts, and so being called a podcasting pioneer is very strange.
Hey, you got your name out there, your voice out there, and you were, I mean, I'm not counting Bollycast because they don't count ever, never anything. You and Nipun were like, you guys were like on that edge, on the forefront of like, no one's doing this, guys.
Yeah, well, I blame Nipun for it though. Don't give me any credit.
No, I do. Too bad he's not here, so.
Okay, it was all downhill once he left, though. Baloch was just, I don't even know what to say about that.
I don't really want to talk about that phase of your podcasting career.
Hashtag, I don't either, exactly.
Hashtag not my Nipun. So before we start, so let's get this on the record. So I know you as Kayfil. It's really hard for me to call you anything else. I was talking to my wife, and I'm like, I should probably message. And in my head, I'm like, I should say Catherine. But then I'm like, that sounds weird, right? Doesn't it?
I mean, Kayfil is what people started calling me in college, so it's fine.
Okay. Cool.
It's the only nickname I'm cool with.
I toyed with like Katie at one point, but I'm like, no, that sounds worse.
No, that's terrible.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
And like my Indian friends in India call me Kathy, which is also terrible.
No.
I mean, it's fine when they do it. I love them, but like,
I've got a Kathy in my life already and on the show, so and that's just gonna confuse me.
Yeah, exactly. No.
Kayfil is pretty bad.
Kayfil is fine.
Cool. So before we get into the movies that we're gonna talk about and compare, I do want to get to know more about you because however much I do know about you, it's all surface, you know, like most of my personality. But, I do want to go a little bit deeper. I kind of want to find out how you got into podcasting, because that's a story I think we need to hear. And just your interest in movies in general, kind of like let me say your origin story, more or less.
Oh my God. That would take a few movies. No full origin stories. I'm telling you, I really didn't get into podcasting. I'm not into podcasting. Nipun just was, and I met him on the internet, like I met you. And he was like, let's do this podcast. And I was like, sure. All it takes is like a Skype call every once in a while and watching movies, which I already do. And here we are.
I feel like there's so much in between. Okay, let's peel it back a little bit. So the podcasting thing, fine. Not, you were coerced into it, I want to say. Cause again, he's not here to defend himself. But let's talk about Bollywood
podcast
in general.
Podcast rape.
Oh God. let's talk about Bollywood in general. So if for people that, you know, can't pick up on this maybe through like the auditory medium that is podcasting, Kayfil is a white lady. I'm pausing for people's gasping and shocks of, you know, but
I think I sound pretty white. I don't think it's that surprising.
I've heard some brown people that sound pretty white.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. But yeah. So how did you get into Bollywood movies, I guess, is the first thing I want to know.
Gosh, these are terrible questions. I don't know.
It's such a legitimate question.
No, it is a legitimate question, but it's a hard one.
By the way, I did have a bet with myself about how long it would take for you to start complaining, and I think we're in like 4 minutes and change.
So I started complaining before we started recording.
This is true.
I was messaging you complaining. This is true. It didn't take very long.
This is true.
Anyway, to answer your question, I was never really into movies. My family is never, like, they're very removed from film. They're mathematicians and, like, have no interest in film whatsoever. So I wasn't exposed to, like, any film growing up whatsoever. Occasionally TV shows, but, like, that was about it. And so in high school, when I started, you know, having friends and things like that and was allowed to explore my own personality. So I grew up in South Carolina, which is a little bit, at the time in the 90s, it was a little bit racist. I have no better way of saying that. And so I was sort of grouped together, like my group of friends, because I have like, I'm ambiguously Italian and was dark skinned because I was exposed to the sun all the time, relatively. To the rest of South Carolina. And so I was sort of grouped with like the Iranians and the Bengalis. There's a large community of both of those in South Carolina. And so I sort of just got exposed to Bollywood films via them. And the first film I ever saw was Mehuna. And so I love Farah Khan, which will come up later. But yeah, so then I was like, I kept going with it in college, even though I tried not to. And I sort of realized that the reason I enjoyed the Bollywood films more than anything else, because I'd never gotten into films before, was because I was always into music and theater and like a bunch of things that all overlap in Bollywood really nicely, and dance, to tell like the same story. And you don't get that in Hollywood movies so much. So.
Fair enough, fair enough. You do realize, though, your story, you could easily replace Bollywood movies with, like, drugs or cigarettes or any other sort of vice, and it would just be, like, one of those terrible, like, same old... Because you're like, I was grouping up with a bunch of kids, and I got exposed to it from there. I tried to get out of it, but it was just so interesting.
Yeah, no, it is, yeah. Tragedy. I mean, the drug part is also there, but,
oh, it was implied, right, for sure.
Yeah.
Of course. That's cool though. I don't think I've ever heard of that version of that story of like you just kind of got exposed to it because of the people you were hanging around with.
Yeah, people didn't think Italian was white back then, I guess. I don't know what to say.
I don't even know where to go with that. Okay, so rewind a little bit. You said your family wasn't into films at all. So you weren't really exposed to much films. Like, so you didn't have, like, any sort of memories of, like, one specific movie or, like, you know, like, the stuff that you usually cinephiles will kind of relate with or go back to, right? No?
No, my specific movie is Mehuna. Like, that's it.
Wow. So that was not only, like, your Bollywood awakening, that was like your film awakening. That was
Well, I've been coming to terms with that. Like, my dad actually did expose me to a lot of TV, and so that also counts, and I've been slowly coming to terms with that. Like, I did, like, I watched a lot of TV as a kid, and I was really into, like, ridiculous shows that, like, kids shouldn't have been into, like, Get Smart and, like, all these shows that were, like, 50 years before my time, and that was because of my dad. So I was sort of a cinephile, but it started with TV instead.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also, like, it's just been hard to come to terms with because that's not how most people are. And, like, as filmmakers, so.
And that is what you're doing now, right, essentially?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what that is. What is that?
Like, I'm saying, you are a filmmaker now, right?
Yeah, so that's yeah.
You eventually did come to terms with it enough to actually pursue it as a career choice.
Yeah, but the coming to terms with it started with Bollywood, and the TV thing I'm starting to realize now is something I was always into as well. I just never really realized it. It's hard also, I mean, like, as a woman, like, when you think of film directors, and, like, especially from, like, a very academic family, you don't think of me when you think of film directors, so it took a while for me to even realize that was an option in my life. It would be one thing if I came from, like, a film family, or if, like, my name was Martin Scorsese and I saw it after every movie, you know, like it's different. So when you think of film directors, you just think of like old white dudes. So I never really thought of myself in that position as like an option for my life. So yeah.
It sounds to me like you, did you go through similar stigmas? Like, for example, for someone coming from a South Asian family, that's kind of like a, very similar to what you're describing to me right now. And like, you know what I mean? Like, so like it is, like, you know, coming from a South Asian background, film is never, is not a, you know, practical career choice. You know, it's as far away as you can get from a career choice. And your story is kind of sounding like that. So did you face a lot of obstacles when you did want to kind of go down that avenue?
Oh yeah. My parents still like don't, I mean, I think my dad's a little more supportive than my mom, but like my family is totally like, oh, if we buy you good winter boots, will you want a 9-to-5 job instead of just like sitting at home? Like, really? They don't understand what I do at all.
Oh my God. So is it
your like, they think I'm just avoiding the cold, which like I totally am just avoiding the cold, but like also like it is also a legitimate career. They don't understand it.
That's hilarious. So they try to bribe you back into what? Being an engineer? Like, I don't understand. Like, what is their end goal with that?
Oh, God. I don't know. They wanted me to do medical school for a while. Then they finally were just like, okay, she's not doing medical school. Like, they literally, for like 5 years after college, kept being like, oh, you know, you could still go to medical school. And I'm like, no, I really can't. Like, I didn't do any of those requirements. Like, I have to take a lot of classes.
Is your family brown? Like, this makes no, like, I'm having a hard time reconciling all this.
I swear, like, South Carolina and both, and Italian Catholics, I feel like are very similar to brown, like, to Indian society as well. Like, I feel like there's a lot of similarities there.
That's ridiculous. okay, so you are a filmmaker now. Obviously, you did reconcile that aspect of wanting to see someone like yourself in that sort of landscape. What have you done so far?
I've done so far, not much. I'm very bad at self-promotion. This is very bad. I've directed a couple episodes of web series and like music videos and short films. I've been assistant directing a lot on a lot of different things. I did some virtual reality stuff recently, which was really interesting. I'm writing a TV series right now. I'm sort of all over the place, and I haven't done anything of note at this moment, but it'll happen when this TV series comes out.
When the podcast comes out, you mean? Yes. Get the shot.
Oh, yeah, the podcast is what's going to really, really boost my career.
You're going to go so big.
Yeah, they're going to just give me a Marvel movie after this. Actually, I'm hoping for Jurassic Park. That's what I really want.
You'll take off her high heels when she's running in that one?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I just want to play with dinosaurs, like, really. I don't really care about the rest of it.
I feel like we're uncovering so many sort of, like, hidden things that I could easily go down this avenue of, why dinosaurs? What the hell? But, yeah, it's... You're so right. You need, like, multiple movies to get into everything that you're all about. It's just, like, yeah. I'm having to restrict myself from going down different avenues with you.
That's probably the other reason I like Bollywood movies as well, because, like, they're also
the plot
convoluted.
Points are all over the place.
Exactly. As much as my life's plot points are all over the place.
So you must love like 90s Bollywood. Like 3.5 hours of 2.5 hour of filler.
Yeah, I must say I do have to like fast forward through some of those songs. They get repetitive. But
I don't know. So what's your when was this? When was your Bollywood awakening? How many years ago was that?
Oh gosh, my first Bollywood
like
movie
Mahuna.
I saw was 2006.
Okay, so you're like 12 years in. What's your favorite Bollywood movie?
Om Shanti Om.
Really?
That's why we're about to talk about it. Yeah.
Which is okay. We'll get into that. Like, yeah. You know, you're not mishearing this episode. As much as it is supposed to be about William Shakespeare and Hamlet, adapted into a Mel Gibson movie and countless others, and then a Bollywood movie called Haider, somehow. As per Kayfail, Om Shanti Om also ties into this, which I didn't know about for the last 2 years. I kind of get it now. I still don't know how she's going to do this, but we'll save that for the later on, I guess. We'll find out how that works.
Okay, that's fine. I'll stop name dropping it.
That's okay. You can tease. It's fine. See, and you said you're not good at self-promotion. Okay, so I have a few more questions. So you ever considered, like, doing something with like either the Bollywood genre or like a Bollywood style of movie or story? Like, has anything come into you as a filmmaker? Like, do you consider that kind of storytelling to be something that you could do? Or
oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't know why that's a question. Of course, that's something I want to do. I just Yeah, I mean, I'm not in Bombay right now doing that because it was easier to sort of learn the ropes and establish myself here. Especially again, as a woman, like, I don't want to go over there and have people not listening to me. I already had people not listening to me on sets here. So yeah, maybe if I, like, you know, make my way up there. But I also, I mean, I feel like the Bollywood influence is going to come in no matter what kind of films I make, similar to my other favorite film, which isn't Bollywood, The Lunchbox. I feel that the fact that he did grow up in the Bollywood world allowed him to still use all of those different things as different layers. Like, all the music means something that you hear in the yeah. background, and everything really, like, there's many layers to it. And I don't think you would have gotten that if he had been just some American guy watching stupid Hollywood action movies his whole life.
Fair enough. That makes complete sense. But do you think that's necessary, though, Noel? Like, today? Like, do you really need to go to Bombay in India to start making movies of that?
I just want to avoid the cold.
Oh, right, right.
But no, no, I don't. I mean, I have a few, like, I mean, I just have to get money. I have a treatment for a movie that would happen here that would still be in that same sort of style. But I also have one that would be set in India. So it's sort of whatever. I'd love to be working in India, though. I'd love to have, like, winter home in Bombay and summer home in New York. That's, like, the ultimate goal.
It does sound like you know exactly where you want to go. You know exactly what you want to do. And again, I'm not being facetious. But, like, I'm excited. I want to see something that you do, because that sounds like you're saying you're all over the place, but I feel like you have a pretty clear path of what you want to do and where you want to go.
Yeah, I guess I do. That's really weird for me to realize, though, because, like, I've always felt like someone asking for a 5-year plan is a completely ridiculous thing, but...
You're welcome.
Yeah, I actually have goals. Wow, so weird.
I feel like the show so far has been more of, like, a therapy session.
It has been. It really has been.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, that's awesome.
You don't want to hear the rest of my childhood traumas?
Do you want to discuss the rest?
No. I really don't.
Oh, God. Okay. All right. So bring it back into a bit more focus. So you do watch Hollywood movies too, right?
Yeah.
Because I remember, back during WTF Bollywood days, I remember my first reaction was, oh my God, this white girl doesn't watch any Hollywood movies.
I mean, comparatively, right. But I guess also part of it has been coming into becoming a filmmaker. Like, I've felt more compelled to watch, like, more Hollywood movies because that's what I do with my life.
Right.
Whereas, no, like, historically, I haven't watched much, and any, like, old Hollywood movie references I won't get.
So make sure to make a lot of them.
Yeah.
So what do you feel about remakes, though, then, in general?
I think remakes are awesome. I think that's... I'm actually super, really into... I don't want to call it remakes so much as, like, cultural translations of movies. Like
adaptations?
I mean, adaptations also works. But I feel like still there's, like, a stealing that's implied there.
Like a plagiarism sort of a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where I don't think it's so much plagiarism as like, what I'm really interested in is things that are culturally translated. I actually, in 2012, I, like, did this whole project in this Hindi program I was in that was all about, like, culturally translating Ferris Bueller into a Indian context.
Oh my God, so, do it.
I did do it, but it's hidden away on the internet and no one will ever find it. But
wait, this is a produced thing, like, on camera, or?
I mean, it was just the final project for school. It wasn't, like, a thing.
Tell me more.
No one's ever going to find it. It's probably deleted from all the history of the internet, unless, like, I don't know, so the FBI has a copy.
Tell me more about where you went to school.
No, this was just, like, a Hindi program I did over the summer that year. But yeah, it was, so I'm really interested in that kind of a thing.
You know what? I like that too. Like, I like it. Like, I mean, that's kind of one of the whole points of this show, of this format, is that I do like movies that can do that, that can take something like a source material and truly adapt it. And I call those truly, like, true adaptations, where it's like, you're not just copying or you're not just mimicking what you saw, you know, somewhere else. You are changing the setting, changing the character motivations, changing characters if necessary, and essentially trying to fit it, the story you're trying to tell, inspired off of that original story. And I think, again, with the movies we're discussing, I think the Bollywood one does that really well. But yeah, we'll get into that later.
Yeah, I didn't want to jump ahead and start talking.
It's a good segue. Like, I can't not use
it. It is a good segue.
But I don't think I've ever got that. I don't think I've ever had someone unabashedly tell me that they love remakes. I've gotten people that are very, you know, their reactions have been very sort of, you know, treading, kind of walking the fence, that, oh, it depends on if it's done well, that kind of thing. But that's surprising to me that you as a filmmaker are completely okay with remakes. Do you ever find that something that you love shouldn't be touched, or do you have any sort of apprehensions or sort of restrictions on that front?
I mean, no, I don't think I would ever say that something shouldn't be touched. I think there are bad remakes, but like that doesn't mean they shouldn't exist. Like, I don't know. One example of this sort of is that I think Groundhog Day as a movie was not very good, but when they adapted it into like every, like this is now the plot of so many different things.
Yeah.
Like, and then they adapted it also into a Broadway play, which was like an amazing adaptation of a movie. It was better as a play, I think. I got dragged to it. I don't normally see Broadway plays, a New Yorker like that. But I mean, that's been adapted in so many ways. Like, Barbara Deco is almost Groundhog Day 2. Like, well,
there's an X-Files episode of that. And I think recently they did a horror version with Happy Death Day. Just a couple of, I think for Halloween last year, there was a movie that did pretty good.
Right, exactly. So, like, you know, I love Barbara Deco, but, like, I know everyone hated it, and it's obviously, like, a shitty adaptation if you're
I thought Barbara Deco was more on the lines of Click than...
I haven't seen that.
Oh, my God.
I just saw Groundhog Day after the Broadway play.
This is where I get the impression that you don't watch enough Hollywood movies.
I literally just saw Groundhog Day because I liked the Broadway play so much, and I was like, oh, I need to watch this movie. So...
Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough.
But point being, I mean, like, yeah, I think you can complain all you want about how things were remade, but I think taking a basic premise that you like is, I mean, Shakespeare wrote all the stories already, like, since we're talking about Shakespeare here, like, there's so many plots that worked, and the reason they're still popular today is because they do work, so why not take those same plots and make them into things?
Yeah. Fair enough. Is there anything that, in particular, I mean, besides the Daisy Ferris Bueller, is there any other sort of anything out there that you would want to remake?
Oh, I would love to remake Groundhog Day. Like, I finally, when I saw that movie, I was like, if someone had, like, you know that question they always ask filmmakers, like, what do you wish you had directed? Like, that's what I wish I had directed, because I don't think it's that great of a movie, and I think it would be so interesting, especially for a female, because it's so dependent on it being a male lead. Like, nothing about that story works if it's a woman. So it would be so interesting to it. I know that's like the thing everyone's doing now, and everyone hates, like, oh, everyone's just remaking everything with a female lead. But like, I think that would be really interesting. I'd love to do that.
In like a sort of like a Bollywood milieu, or like more of like a North American Hollywood style?
I think it would just be Catherine's style. I don't know what else to say.
K-Phil style?
K-Phil style, exactly.
That sounds dirty. Okay, so you are, you know, kind of switching back around. With Bollywood movies, there is a lot of sort of, I mean, Hollywood does this too, but Bollywood, I find, does it without realizing they're doing it, which I think kind of makes it worse. But there's a lot of sort of misogyny and sort of women characters aren't really given their due. In, again, I don't want to generalize, but in a lot of Bollywood movies. As a feminist, do you pick up on that more, or do you kind of just let it go because, oh, it's just kind of a cultural, you know, they're not there yet sort of a excuse? Or, like, how do you react to that when you see that in a Bollywood movie versus, you know, your life, for example?
No, it sucks. I mean, like, I understand sometimes, I mean, this all just goes back to shit I've already discussed on that waste of a podcast that I was forced to do, but
no,
like,
no one's going back to listen to I know, but again.
You are, so you've heard it, so I feel like I'm repeating myself talking to you about it, but I mean, like, DDLJ, watching it now, you know, since I obviously didn't grow up with it, I hated it, I still hate everything about that, like, same with, I mean, same thing with Hollywood movies, like, I watched Serendipity, and I was like, this is trash, like, I want to murder everyone in this movie, and that's how I felt about DDLJ, too, like, it's awful how sexist a lot of these things are, but then there are movies like Rodney Rothor where, like, I can sort of appreciate that that was their target audience and that's why it was the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I still don't condone it.
Right. No, obviously. Do you find that, though, when you say, like, for example, there's a lot of movies that I watch and go, this was friggin' awesome. And I'll have someone point out to me that, yeah, but these aspects were very problematic. And then I go, oh, shit, yeah. Do you find that, does that take away from your enjoyment of the movie as a whole? Do you find that, you know, oh, I wish this wasn't part of the movie? Like, how do you react to those situations?
Oh, no, I mean, I'm still a masochist. So, like, I'll watch shit and, like, hate it. And I have no problem with watching something that I hate.
Cool.
so it doesn't take away from my enjoyment of the movie, but, like, I wouldn't go around being, like, it just makes me call for a remake, to be honest. Like, that's how I feel about Serendipity. Like, I really want, that's another one. I really want to remake it, but, like, in a realistic way where, like, at the end, she's like, you're a creepy stalker, go away, and doesn't fall in love with him.
Right.
Like, I think that would be really fun. So,
that should be how every, like, a lot of Bollywood movies end, 25 minutes in.
Yeah.
You're a creepy stalker, get away from me. Credits.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, so I don't know. There's not, I don't have a problem with watching movies like that, but, and I enjoy watching them. I don't know. Weird question.
I got it.
Hold on.
These little jabs are really making me insecure. Like, friggin', I gotta say though, it's funny because the amount of love you seem to have for remakes as an idea. How have you not been on this show earlier?
I've been begging you for like 3 years.
Like... All right, moving on. So coming right back to the movies we're going to talk about today. So essentially we're discussing William Shakespeare adaptation of the tragedy, the play. It's been remade countless times in, God, so many adaptations in Hollywood itself. With a lot of different actors, for whatever reason, I decided to put K-Phil through the torture of watching the Mel Gibson version.
This is a terrible idea.
I didn't see this version ever. I've never seen this version, and I wanted to watch it, because there was a time where I liked Mel Gibson. I still do as a director, but he's kind of a douche at the same time. So, yeah, so I wanted to watch the Mel Gibson version. So we are comparing the Shakespeare adaptation of Hamlet in 1990, starring Mel Gibson and Glenn Close, directed by Franco Zeffirelli. The movie was nominated for 2 Oscars, nothing in any sort of major categories.
I was about to say.
Costume design or something else is at all not important. And we're going to be comparing that
costume
movie.
Costume design is important.
We're going to be talking about that movie and comparing it to the Bollywood movie Heather, which is starring Shahid Kapoor, Tabu, and KK Menon, directed by Vishal Bharadwaj. This movie comparatively did a lot better in terms of awards and acclaim. It received 6 Filmfare nominations. Shahid Kapoor won for Best Actor. And more importantly, as part of the National Film Awards of India, it was nominated in 5 categories and won for Best Direction. Set design and production design, I think, was one of those categories in there. So, yes, you are right. But yeah, so these are 2 movies we've been comparing. Somehow within that, we're going to throw in Om Shanti Om. I'm sure K-Phil will tell me when. And if I don't do it properly, I'm sure she'll jump in and tell me I'm not doing it properly. So also, before we get into details, obviously we are going to talk about these movies in a lot of depth and detail. Heather is 4 years old, but again, if you know Hamlet, you kind of know what the hell happens. So we're going to get into spoiler territory. So I'm going to give you a spoiler warning now. If for whatever the hell reason you want to watch these movies.
Yeah, that's a really, like, there's no reason for a spoiler warning.
Dude,
everyone knows what Hamlet
know.
Is.
I don't know. I'd rather be safe than sorry. Okay. So.
Okay.
Spoiler warning there. You got to find out about K-Phil. If you want to watch these movies and come back and finish the show, feel free to do so at this point. So, Hamlet, 1990, Mel Gibson. Tell me how much you love this movie.
So, I think about probably less than 30 minutes in, maybe like 15 minutes into it. No, 5 minutes into it, I was already on my phone, not paying any attention to it. 15 minutes into it, I was texting Shaw being like, do I have to watch this? Can't we just spark notes this? And he's like, way ahead of you, already spark notes it.
I read up on it, but I still watched the movie, KFO. I still went through it all.
No, I was not going to watch that shit. Like, it was awful. But, like, I think we can talk about why it was awful. I think one of the things you pointed out about, like, this whole adaptation thing, it wasn't an adaptation. It was straight up them just trying to put Hamlet as Hamlet into a film instead of a theater. And I think that's one of the reasons why it wasn't good. They didn't put it into any context. They didn't use the film medium to make it any better. They just were trying to tell a story that's like 400 years old now on camera, which just didn't make any sense.
In 1990, not now.
But, I mean, still now-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
Now relatively to Shakespeare.
Fair enough. Listen, before you complain about how I made you watch this movie, you should thank me for not making you watch the Kenneth Branagh version, which is 4 hours long.
So can I ask, though, are there... Sorry, this is probably a segue, but are there adaptions of Hamlet in Hollywood that are, like, not trash? Like, that are actual adaptations?
I gotta say, while I was researching this show that you and I had already decided to do and had already picked the movies to do, I did come across a few other versions, which I think would have been a lot better. I'm just gonna tell you who's in these movies, in these versions. There's a Hamlet in 1948 with Laurence Olivier, which I think would have been interesting to watch. There's a Hamlet in 2000 with Ethan Hawke and Kyle MacLachlan, which I think would have been infinitely interesting, more interesting to watch.
Those still set in like the 1600s?
No, I think the Laurence Olivier one is, I think the Ethan Hawke Hamlet is modern day. There is a 2015 Benedict Cumberbatch. Yeah, but I don't know. This one looks weird. I don't know what this is. This looks like a play shot by a camcorder. I don't know. Granted, there are versions we could have watched that I think would have been better. The Ethan Hawke one is in modern day, so that is more of an adaptation along the lines of what we're talking about than a straight up sort of copy paste thing. But yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, you didn't see this movie. I have seen this movie all the way through to the end, and I kind of have to agree. This is not interesting at all. They do keep it with the same sort of language of the play from Shakespearean times. It's pretty straightforward. For anyone who doesn't know, I feel like there's a lot of people that don't know K-Phil, calm down. It's basically a story.
I understand,
but I like approaching things like people don't know.
Okay, talk to your audience instead of me.
Well, they've been on here more than once in 2 years, okay? So, yeah. So for people that don't know the story of Hamlet, it's essentially about how, it's a king who passes away, and his wife ends up quickly remarrying his brother, who ends up becoming the king of Denmark. Takes over the throne. They have a son, a fully grown son who is saddened by his dad's death. And as he kind of discovers, grieves for his father, he's visited by his father's ghost, who essentially tells him that, hey, your uncle's the one that killed me to, you know, do your mom. And so you gotta avenge me. And so then Hamlet, from what I understand, pretends to go crazy, to throw everyone off of I don't know what, so he can plan, you know, revenge on his uncle. He does this by putting on a play where he acts out exactly what his uncle did to kill his dad. And based on his uncle's reaction, he realizes he's guilty and decides to kill him. And the climax is a really massive Bollywood convoluted thing where the uncle's trying to kill him. He's trying to kill the uncle. Other people get caught in the middle. Everyone dies. And that's basically, you know, Shakespeare. This Mel Gibson version was horrible, except for that ending. I gotta say the ending was pretty interesting.
Didn't make it there.
Yeah. No, thank you for coming on the show.
So what I wanted to respond to was you talking about how they use the language. Like, I've seen a billion, not that's really an over-exaggeration. I've seen like two play adaptations of Hamlet where they still use the exact script, right, that Shakespeare wrote, but it's not convoluted and confusing. Like, there are, like, I think putting on these fake British accents and, like, trying to make it set in 1600 is what makes it confusing. Like, you have to, when you do Shakespeare, you have to do it as if you are you, you know? Like, you have to find the yourself, your own rhythms in it. You have to find what the words actually mean. You don't read it as verses. Like, that's what they did wrong. That's why it doesn't make any sense.
Do you know, like, do you have much experience with Shakespeare in general? Like, in terms of academic experience, something?
I'm pretending to. No, I don't. I took like one acting class where we had to do one Shakespeare monologue. So I'm like, I know everything about Shakespeare. No, I know nothing. It was literally like 2 weeks of one semester of a class.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I really like, so going back to what you're saying, you're absolutely right. I think when you use sort of this kind of, you know, prose and this kind of a language, I think it really comes down to the deliveries and the choices you make as actors and as directors to kind of convey those lines. Because there's a way to do these movies. And again, it's been done. Romeo and Juliet being the biggest one. The Leonardo DiCaprio one. I forget who the director was. But there is a way to do this where it's kind of like, you know, you get what's going on even if you don't understand the entirety of that sentence or that monologue or that soliloquy. The Baz Luhrmann version of Romeo and Juliet, that you can watch, and same sort of prose, same sort of language, and you kind of still understand what's happening, even though it is a sort of contemporary retelling. I didn't enjoy this. It was Mel Gibson crazy is Mel Gibson normal. Like, I didn't find anything interesting about that. And the funny part is, when I looked into this, the reason why he was cast in this role is because the director saw his performance in Lethal Weapon, in the scene where he tries to be crazy as he's trying to talk some guy off a roof. Let me guess, you haven't seen it?
No, of course.
Okay. All right.
So, keep talking to your audience. I don't need to be here. It's okay.
There's literally, like, there's I think a few scenes in that movie where he pretends to be like a psychotic kind of loose cannon, the loose cannon cop trope. And the director was like, that's good. I like that. I want him to do that for a 3-hour movie. And that's literally why he was casting this.
Awful. I liked the opening credits sequence. I thought that was interesting. I was immediately turned off because at first I thought Glenn Close looked like she was way younger than Mel Gibson. I looked it up. They are actually, like, I guess if she got her period really early, she could have given birth to him. Like, she is, like, 11 years older than him. But, like, they look way too close in age to be mother and son.
Well, it's weird, too, because, so, I mean, like, going into this movie, I obviously knew a little bit about Hamlet and what happens, kind of like the broad strokes of it all. So I knew who Ophelia was. And when that scene starts and they're kind of in that room and they're, you know, being playful to one another or whatever, you know, right before she runs off to see the uncle again, I was really confused. I'm like, wait, is she Ophelia or is she his mom? Like, I didn't get it. For the longest time, I'm like, She's not acting motherly, and she looks like she could easily be his sister. And it was a confusing time until I think he says mother, and then she goes kiss some the old guy. I'm like, okay, all right, weird.
And part of it is because, like, incest is supposed to be, like, this underlying theme of all of Hamlet. So, like,
we're expecting it.
No, I'm just saying, like, so obviously the relationship would be a little confusing, but it would be a lot less confusing if she was actually older than him.
Well, and actually, and that's another awesome segue, K-Phil, Jesus Christ. The relationship between the mother and son does seem a lot closer, and there are sort of these tones, these sort of subtle tones of something a lot closer than a straightforward mother-son relationship. Did you notice that at all?
I don't remember. I should have taken notes. I think there was some of that, but I also knew I was looking for that, so I can't really... And I also can't compare it to Mel Gibson because I obviously didn't watch that, so...
I honestly can. You could just watch, like, a YouTube clip of that Lethal Weapon scene, and that was him in this movie, basically. So, yeah. So, Hyder. So... What do you think about Hyder, since we're on Hyder?
I thought...
Hyder? I don't know how to say this name. hater?
You're more of an expert than I am.
I feel like there's different ways of saying it. I just don't know what they chose.
I always thought it was Heider, but Heider. I don't know.
Heider. Yeah, in the movie they go Heider, so I guess we'll go with Heider.
Okay, cool. So, I liked it. I mean, it's a proper adaptation. I thought one thing, again, that was way better than the Mel Gibson one and made it watchable was that they established the setting really well. They didn't just assume you already knew Hamlet. Whereas, like, if they had established 1600s England, like, maybe it could have been okay. But they never established that. They just went straight into, like, what was written in Shakespeare, which is fine if you're living in that time, but we weren't. So you needed some context. And so it was nice that you really got an establishment in Heather of the world.
Yeah. And I mean, to put that into context, the Mel Gibson movie opens with the death of his father. That happens 5 minutes before the interval in Heather. Whereas all the way before that, you get all this world building, you get the relationship, you get the characters, you get the political landscape and everything else that's going on, which, I mean, and again, this might make more sense if we were doing a contemporary adaptation to contemporary adaptation comparison, but even in Hamlet, I feel like there's a world there that you didn't explain to me. Like, there's a hierarchy that you didn't explain to me. Even their wedding, I think, happened, like, we didn't see it in the Mel Gibson version. I mean, yeah, we saw a celebration of it, but yeah, we didn't get that sense of that world or what was going on. I mean, there's a scene in the Mel Gibson version where they go to England because the England king was going to kill him. And we don't understand what relationship that king has to this king. And are they buddies?
Yeah.
Is that just a thing they do? Like, what's happening?
Right, exactly. Like, everything was really, and I think a lot of it comes down to the audience. I think part of it probably was that, like, everyone here in America, like, grew up reading Shakespeare in schools in England, probably even more so. So they're like, oh, everyone already knows the plot, whatever. Whereas Vishal Bhardwaj, I think, was actively trying to bring Shakespeare to a new audience. So that might have been part of why it was a lot better done in that way. But I don't think you should assume your audience knows anything when you're starting a movie. I think that's ridiculous because if I already read Shakespeare so many times, why would I be watching your version unless that was me?
Completely agree, Catherine. You should never assume your audience knows everything. You're right. So speaking to that, so the Mel Gibson movie was actually a joint co-production between an American company, a French company, and a British company. So you're right. I guess, yeah, those people coming into this kind of assume that, oh, majority of people know the story, so we'll just kind of get it going. In Heather, the parts of, that are in Kashmir, because essentially they shift the story from Denmark to Kashmir, a lot of things are totally different. It's really hard to kind of pinpoint all the changes they make. First of all, it is not his father's ghost that comes back and lets him know that, hey, you're uncle killed me. That happens through a proxy character, a brand new character that's not in the original play, in Heider, played by Irfan Khan, who's a cellmate of his dad's because his father, again, isn't killed right away. He's imprisoned, tortured, and then murdered as a suspected militant in a sort of tumultuous political situation. Yeah, it's completely different. Like, I remember even when we get to the point when he confronts his uncle and he's gonna kill him, which is where the play ends, which is where the Mel Gibson movie ends. We still get a half an hour movie after that in Heather. And it's scenes that happened earlier on in the play that they put near the end of the movie.
How did you feel about Irfan Khan's character? I don't think I liked him.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think that I liked that change. That was something that I feel like I wish it was a ghost. Also, you know, thanks to Spark Notes, they should sponsor this podcast. I mean, this is something I knew before.
I feel like you're setting a very bad precedent for people coming on the show, not having seen the movies, and just reading the damn Wikipedia page and goes, no, I read it. It's fine. Catherine did it too. It's fine.
No. Listen, I've seen Hamlet a million times. I don't need to watch the specific Mel Gibson version for us to talk about Heider and Om Shanti Om. So whatever.
She's a professional storyteller, guys. You can't compare yourself to her. I feel like I have to tell people, can you... Are you going to read the Spark Notes? Can you not do that? Can you watch the movies?
Listen, we... Okay, no, listen for a second. We were comparing Shakespeare's Hamlet to Haider and Om Shanti Om. That's really where this started. So... It just happens to be that the version of Shakespeare's Hamlet that you chose sucked.
I did throw in the Mel Gibson version for shits and giggles, because I just wanted to see that version.
Exactly. So it's totally fine, because I've read Hamlet, I've seen Hamlet.
Sorry.
It's fine.
Okay, continue referring to Spark Notes.
What Spark Notes did remind me of is that the entire plot of Hamlet is about death, and it's about his grappling with death and him trying to come to terms with, like, is that easier than all this shit I'm going through? Would it be better for me to die? Like, that's what the to be or not to be speech is about. And so having that ghost and having some vision that might be the afterlife, but might just be him hallucinating, helps a lot comparatively to just some random dude who was in prison with him. I don't know. I just think, I feel like the metaphors are better with the ghost.
Well, I don't disagree with you entirely, but I feel like, I feel like in Haider, those themes of death and grieving and mourning and, you know, I think that's kind of articulated better with the mom. And when she straight up tells him, that, you know, revenge begets revenge, and you keep doing this, you're not going to break out of the cycle, which is what ties in directly at the ending, where he's conflicted between what he heard his father say, you know, or what he thinks his father says, paraphrased to this guy, versus what his mom keeps telling him. His father says, get revenge for me. His mom says, don't. And essentially that causes him to choose what he does. So I feel like you can remove the ghost as a metaphor because you have that depicted in a different way in Haider.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that. I think you're right. I think the essentials of his battle with what is truth, what is reality, what is death, what happens after death, etc., are explored in other ways. So I guess it's not, like, essential that Irfan Khan is a ghost instead. But I don't know. Personally, I wish it had been a real ghost instead.
But would that have fit with this movie, though? Like, this political movie about Kashmir and the struggle of freedom?
Hamlet was a political play.
Yeah, but I mean, like, in that time, like, ghosts were, like, a thing that they did, right? Like, it was...
Yeah.
Because, I don't ever see someone...
And so this is where like, I was going to bring this up more with Om Shanti Om, but I think that this is where the cultural translation of Hamlet comes into play a little bit, where also Hamlet is a deeply Christian play. And their idea of the afterlife that they're grappling with is very
purgatory,
very based in Christianity. And so moving it into an Indian context, ghosts probably aren't relevant. So you're probably right.
Fair enough.
But that's what I love about the way Om Shanti Om did it instead. They just didn't even bother with grappling
nudging
with death. It was
she's just
reincarnation.
She just wants this show to be all about Om Shanti Om.
I want
this is where we're going, basically. When I first watched Haider, I thought it was equally a slow moving, sort of very boring sort of a movie. I think I appreciate it a lot more when I see what it's based off of. When I see what the original, you know, I mean, I'm sure, again, nothing for the other adaptations of Hamlet, but based on what it could have been, I enjoyed Haider a lot more. There's a lot of things there that are kind of out of left field, like the suicide bombing at the end, and that kind of stuff I thought was, I don't know, out of nowhere. But yeah, I enjoyed it a lot more. I mean, did you find, so I want to talk about this. I want to talk about the two Ophelias, or the, you know, version of Ophelia in Haider. I don't like Shraddha Kapoor as an actress. I have problems with why she, you know, is an actress. But comparing the Ophelias between the Mel Gibson version and this one, I actually liked what they did with her.
Yeah, I actually, so when it was my first time seeing Shraddha Kapoor, when I saw Haider in theaters originally, I wasn't super impressed with her and with Ophelia in the movie, and I feel that, well, I'll go into that later, but point is, now that I've seen her in other things, I feel that I don't know, Michelle Bardot's brought out a lot in her, obviously, and I think she actually did a really good job with the character. One thing that disappointed me, though, is that in some of the play versions that I've seen, like, Ophelia's suicide scene is, like, a super powerful part of the story, and I didn't feel that it felt a little superfluous in Heather.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. I don't disagree entirely, but I feel like they made up for it by having her be such a stronger character prior to that.
Yeah.
Because again, like,
Also, the original Hamlet is supposed to be about, like it's supposed to be super misogynist. Like, he hates women. Like, he hates his mother. He hates Ophelia. He doesn't want to sleep with her. He doesn't. And then this is so romantic. Even his fucking to be or not to be speech in Heather is with Ophelia, which I don't like at all, because that's supposed to be, and the even worse part before that, where it starts on this open big stage to a whole audience, just as like some theatrics. And that's another choice I really didn't like, because the to be or not to be speech, I really like it as a speech and as a piece of literature. It's so interesting to see that as a personal moment of someone grappling with their own death, and what is the meaning of it, and is that the answer to everything that they've been trying to figure out? Is killing yourself what really an easy way out? Is that a good idea? And they just totally made it this public affair in Heather, and I didn't like that at all.
But do you find, though, that that's because, again, just going back to the concept of, you know, plays and having, you know, a play where you can monologue or soliloquy to the audience to reveal character motivation, character thoughts, in a movie, do you feel that that was an adaptation because it's like, okay, well, we can't just have him talking to himself. Like, he needs to be addressing someone or someone else. And do you feel that choice was because of that reason? Because, again, like, it is different from a play to a movie.
Well, first of all, they already were like, oh, he has PTSD, so they already had played the crazy card, so he can do whatever he wants.
Yes.
But also, I think that this is another place where making a film adaptation, you should realize the medium you have with this camera and the way that the camera can help tell the story. Maybe he doesn't even have to talk. You know, maybe he could have that entire dialogue. And I'm just coming up with this as I'm saying it, but I could see him having that entire dialogue just through, like, by himself. He could just be sitting there contemplating it, and that could all be happening in his head. And because we have this other layer of the film doing the storytelling, maybe it doesn't have to be there. Or maybe it could be a voiceover, maybe whatever. Like, I feel like there are other ways to do it that can keep it this deeply personal moment that he doesn't want to let anyone else in on, instead of him cuddling with his boo or whatever. Like, that was just ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I didn't like that either. Especially because, again, like, her reaction to it is the typical girlfriend reaction of, no, don't be crazy. But I did like that. I did like that, the street scene where he does this. I enjoyed that. I thought that was really, one of the major distinctions between the two, the characterizations of Hamlet that I enjoyed is that in Heather, he is that. He's not putting on a show. He's not trying to act weird to kind of make people think he's a certain way than he is. He is legitimately emotionally broken. And I like that because and again, maybe this is just me. I'm uneducated on Hamlet and Shakespeare, but I didn't understand what the point was for Hamlet to fake, you know, being in a worse emotional state than he actually was. But I like that in Heather, he is legitimately that. Like, he's messed up. He has PTSD. They even try to explain it, which you didn't need to explain to me because I saw him break down, in that scene in the graveyard. But yeah, I like that that was like his coming out, like that scene in front of all those people doing that crazy, you know, reading of the legal act or whatever. That to me was like, holy crap, this is not the kid we saw half an hour ago.
Yeah. Well, okay. I will say one thing I really liked about Heather. I mean, like, the two things I really liked about Heather, like, as an adaptation were that they did the scene, the setting development, like I already said, and that the character development of Heather himself was really well done. You could see his entire process. I guess I just, in general, have a problem with the way that mental illness is portrayed in not just Bollywood, but in this case, Bollywood. And I don't see a reason for him to have some crazy public breakdown.
True.
When this was what I feel was a very personal experience for him. It's the death of his father. It's him hallucinating ghosts. Like,
true.
It didn't have to be this public thing.
Yeah, but that's not dramatic. All breakdowns in a movie have to be in public, because that's what's interesting. Rom-coms have taught us that, at least. Okay?
I don't know how to respond to this, so...
Yes. Mission accomplished. That's the whole reason I had you on here. Okay, thank you. yeah, okay, so Hyder I liked. All right, so we're at that time of the show where
I finally get to talk about Om Shanti Om.
I literally hand over reins to you, try to keep it under 15 minutes, but tell us, regale us, okay, Phil, with how Om Shanti Om is somehow connected to William Shakespeare's Hamlet.
I feel like... I don't like it, like, the way you're just like, oh, here, have the stage. Like, oh, my gosh. But, I mean, I feel like it's obvious. Like, when I saw Om Shanti Om in college, it was prefaced to me by my boyfriend at the time as, like, oh, my gosh, there's this story, and you'll love it, and there's this guy, and he's trying to get revenge for someone's death, and he puts on this whole play to tell the whole story of how it happened, and I'm like, so it's basically Hamlet. So this was my introduction to the film before I even saw it. And he was like, I don't know what Hamlet is. He grew up in India. They didn't study Hamlet. And so it was cute. It was a fun conversation. So when I went into the movie thinking it was Hamlet. So, some of this I might be pulling out of my ass, but I also do think that, I don't know. I don't think there's a better cultural translation of Hamlet into a Bollywood context than having it be to avenge, like, the murder of a girl instead of your father, and have the reincarnation aspect instead of, oh, I don't know what's going to happen in the afterlife, blah, 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 just showing it to you and being like, this is what happens in the afterlife, done, you're there. And the mom character sort of functions as the ghost in a lot of ways. I don't know if you noticed this, but I didn't notice this until I was watching Hyder in the context. He calls out his mom in Hyder for, like, all of her dramatics, which happens in Om Shanti Om.
Yeah.
Like
repeatedly.
There are a lot of comparisons that can be made. I don't think that happens so much in actual Hamlet, but I feel like Vishal Bhardwaj knew that he was doing something that had already sort of been done, but not quite.
Yeah, I mean, okay. So, sorry, are you good?
Yeah, I'm good.
You've been waiting 2 years for this. I don't wanna take away from the moment. I didn't get what the hell you were talking about. I don't know what you were on when this was a thing you said to me. So I finally obviously watched everything for the show, and yeah, well, when we got to that climax of that massive sort of, what would you call that song? Like, a ballad? No, like, what would you call that? Because that's not
a
song.
Yeah, I guess it's like a ballad. Like, right? I don't know. I mean, it's whatever they call it in the original Hamlet. I think they just call it, like, a performance.
Like, yeah, but it's like a song that kind of tells you. It's like an epic song, almost, right? That takes you through, like, a whole story. I remember, so, before I watched Om Shanti Om, I remember when, because I usually listen to the soundtrack of Bollywood movies before I watch the movies themselves. I remember that was a song that I hated. And then I remembered at one point when I started listening to the lyrics, I'm like, holy shit, guys, this song's telling a story. I ended up loving the song. And I saw it in the movie, I liked the movie, whatever. I'm watching this today, and that comes up, and literally the play comes up, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh, like, it finally clicks to me what the hell you were saying to me for the last 2 years. Because he's reincarnated, he's an actor, none of this makes any sense. What the hell is she talking about? But yeah, I get it, because they also use this trope that apparently Shakespeare does a lot. Again, I'm not educated enough to know, but Shakespeare does a thing where he puts a play within his story that talks about the events happening in his story, which is exactly what Om Shanti Om does, which is kind of amazing, which I haven't seen anywhere. And the thing that I also got reminded of when I'm watching this is that whole debate of are songs in Bollywood movies canon or not? And I'm watching this, and I'm like, this thing is the biggest contributor to that argument that all songs in Bollywood movies are canon, because this thing is talking about the movie that we're watching right now. Yeah, and I watched this movie with my kids, and I'm telling them, and they were super taken by that. They're like, oh my god, it's a song that's recounting everything that happened in the movie leading up to now. And I'm like, yeah. And we were all so stunned by that. But, yeah. So.
I mean, but it is what happens in Hamlet.
Yeah. It's exactly what happens in Hamlet. I mean, like I said, and that's the whole reason I went through the movie in the beginning, that, you know, Hamlet does put on a play that plays out events that he knows that his uncle killed his dad, so he can get his reaction to see if he's guilty or not, which is exactly what Shah Rukh Khan does in Om Shanti Om.
Yeah, and it also, I mean, I don't know, the more and more I was thinking about it, because I was, like, trying really hard, because I was like, there's, oh my god, Shah's not going to believe me at all. So, like, there is a ghost, that's also true, but also...
Spoiler warning for Om Shanti Om.
The entire part, that was actually a huge spoiler, that was a good thing to say this time.
I said it after that we already spoiled it, so...
That's fine, but... But the, the whole part post-reincarnation, right? Where he's, like, grappling with, is this truth? What's going on? Like, that's literally what Hamlet does. That's the entire point of Hamlet, is him grappling with, I don't know what to believe. I don't know if I believe this Irfan Khan guy. I don't know if I believe this ghost. I don't know what the truth is. And
and to tie into what you just mentioned about the fact that the ghost thing may not work in a Bollywood movie because of the fact that it is a purgatory concept like that is a Christian's exclusively Christian thing. Reincarnation is an exclusively Hindu thing.
Exactly. So it's an even better cultural translation of Hamlet than either, because I mean Farah Khan's a genius for coming up with this, and for I don't know how intentional. I mean, obviously Hamlet was somewhat intentional, but I don't know how, like, where it started, if it was like, let me adapt Hamlet, or if it just sort of came afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we gotta mark the time. It's 10:22 Eastern Standard Time, where I have become in total agreement with K-Phil about Om Shanti Om being somewhat of an adaptation of Hamlet, which is ridiculous. I never thought it would happen, but mark the time. See, here's the thing. I am not as big of a Farah Khan fan as you are. Not to say that I don't like her movies. I recently, because of you and a bunch of other friends of mine who love and swear by Farah Khan, I rewatched Happy New Year, which was, I think, the first movie you guys were discussing in when I found you guys' show.
That was the first episode we did.
Yeah, and I didn't hate it. I remember I liked Mehuna when I first watched it. I absolutely hate Tismar Khan, but again, I'll rewatch it.
Tismar Khan, let's just forget about that. I haven't even seen it because I didn't want to suffer through it. But
no, I have a lot of good friends, that credible friends, that tell me Bollywood is for lovers. Matt and Aaron love Tismar Khan. As far as I remember. But yeah, I mean, so I have been rewatching Farah Khan movies with the mindset of, I don't know what these white people are talking about. And I have changed my opinion. I like them. I didn't realize I have an Om Shanti Om special edition freaking double disc signed poster thing that I bought because that's how much I like the movie. But I'm not as big a fan as Farah Khan.
How do I get that from you? I want it.
I have it. I bought it from this one store which stocked all these original DVDs that they brought from India. This guy was a fucking crazy cinephile. I loved him. I don't know if he's still alive or not, but I'll visit the store. I don't know. I don't want this to sound mean, so I'm going to choose my words really carefully. I don't know if I give Farah Khan the... I don't know if I want to overestimate her so much as to say that what happens in Om Shanti Om at the end is an intentional sort of inspiration or adaptation from Hamlet.
There's no issue. That's the most obvious thing in the world. She's not that much of an idiot. I'm sure that she knew that was what she was doing.
Oh, because I'm saying the complete opposite is what I'm trying to say.
I know, and I think that's absurd. Think that she just came up with that on her own?
You gotta listen to my defense of this. When you're watching this one particular song in Om Shanti Om, in a movie that is ridiculously Bollywood, about Bollywood, it doesn't seem out of place. The question I had watching this and getting to what this was, in my head, I'm like, why don't more Bollywood movies do this? Because this makes sense to what this genre is, and for the way these stories are told in a Bollywood movie, especially these sort of epic, romantic, like, reincarnation and crazy, far-fetched ideas that you portray as serious, emotional things that make you cry, you would think we would get more of these love ballads, which tell you the entire freaking story of the characters and what happened. Like, you're talking about, like, for example, like, you mentioned earlier how, you know, the translation of avenging your lover is better in Bollywood than avenging your father. There's 20 years worth of Bollywood movies that are all about avenging your father. From, like, the 70s to the
80s. Yeah, I guess that's fair.
But...
but not in the 2006 context of Om Shanti Om.
Of course not.
If Om Shanti Om had been made in the 80s, that would be a different story.
I'm going to disagree with you again, because Agnipath, which is an 80s remake, was remade in 2012, which is all about a convoluted-ass plan to get revenge on your father's death.
But after 2006, in the context of 2006, when she's making this movie, everything was a rom-com.
True. Okay, I'll go with you on that. But I'm just, like, in my head, I'm like, why... why don't we get more of this? Like, why don't we get one song in the soundtrack about an epic revenge story that just tells you that, hey, this is an awesome epic revenge story for, like, 3 minutes? Like,
yeah, it would be way better than all the item numbers, for sure.
Listen, and then that's why I'm saying, like, while I'm saying I think Farrakhan is too stupid to do this intentionally, I'm also saying, like, because this seems like a natural thing for a Bollywood movie to have. That's why I'm saying that I think she could have naturally come up with this and said, hey, this is a very cool thing, because this fits a Bollywood movie, a masala Bollywood movie.
So maybe. So, okay, as someone who's in the process of writing something myself right now, like, there are a lot of things that I guess I am subconsciously doing in my writing. So when I'll show it to someone else, they'll be like, oh, I love all the metaphors there. And I'll be like, oh, that was a metaphor?
Yes, and that was all intentional.
Then I'll be like, oh, that was that, but like, it was, like, subconsciously on some level, it was intentional. And so I could imagine Farah Khan being like, oh, let me, like, come up with this idea. And then once someone compared it to Hamlet, she was like, oh, right, this actually is sort of, like, probably subconsciously somewhere in my mind, some adaptation of Hamlet. I think Farah Khan's very smart. I really do. I think her movies are very, very intelligent. I think that especially Om Shanti Om is so purposefully, like, everything about it mimics Bollywood so well. I don't like your disapproving face right now. But the level of mockery of Bollywood in Om Shanti Om, like, is so smart. It's really intelligent.
I do have to say, and again, and 2 years ago, I would have said this as an insult to her. But now I say this as a compliment, because she has an awareness of Bollywood. Which comes across in almost all her movies, which I don't think any other director has, which I kind of really appreciate at this point, because it's kind of like the self-deprecating, but also satirical sort of vibe on the industry that she's very much a part of, which I think is really cool.
It's self-deprecating, but also, like, very, like, but respectful of the genre as well at the same time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
it's amazing.
I can't think of Hollywood equivalents, but it reminds me of, there's certain, like Monty Python movies almost. There's a certain vibe where it's like, she kind of mocks the thing that she's doing within the thing that she's doing, kind of a thing.
Right.
And thank you for kind of changing my perspective on that. Yeah, I mean, I think that's really all there is left to say. Did you have any parting thoughts about Hamlet and Heather, or, you know, another 10 minutes?
No, you agree with me, so yeah, I feel like my goal is achieved.
And you agree with me that Farrakhan's not smart enough to do this intentionally.
I don't agree with that at all. She's a genius.
Editing all of that out.
She is a genius. No.
Silence for, I'm just choosing where I'm going to cut it. Okay, so thank you so much, Kefal, for being on the show today. Do you want to let people know where they can get a hold of you on social media, or if you want to promote something that you're currently doing, because as you said, you're doing a lot of things right now.
No, I don't have anything to promote. But my social media handle on Twitter and Instagram is @Kefal, which is @KAY_FIL. And I probably talk a lot about the stuff I'm doing there very unintentionally. So that's my self-promotion.
Very nice.
And also, Farrakhan's a genius. Can I throw that in one more time?
I'm just pausing, so where I'm going to cut
it. No, stop!
No, but seriously, though, thank you so much for coming. This was really fun. We got to do this again, because again, like I said, you talked about how much you love remakes being unprompted by me so many times that we got to do this a lot more.
Yeah, took you long enough.
I'm cutting that out too. All right. Thank you so much for being here once again. Thank you for everyone for listening. Please subscribe to this show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Google Play Music, or any of your preferred podcasting app. If you want to listen directly on your browser or your mobile device, feel free to visit my website on blankpagebeatdown.com. If you like what you heard today, not barring Kayful's opinions, please leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find the show and helps really kind of sort of placate my insecurity about life in general. Follow the podcast on Twitter at splitscreen_pod. Follow me personally on Twitter at TheShahShahid. And that's usually the best place to get a hold of me for any feedback or, you know, film remake ideas that you want to see featured on the show. And keep in mind, the Split Screen podcast is one that is reliant on guests. So if you have any sort of ideas of remakes you want to do, if you want to come on and discuss a movie or a remake yourself, definitely get in touch with me. Throw me a line at shah@blankpagebeatdown.com. It will take me a lot less than 2 years for you to come on for the first time.
Oh my god, fuck off.
You just ruined the explicit rating of this show right now. Thank you everyone for listening. Have a great day. Until next time.